Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, May 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Best-selling cookbook author Bruce Weinstein is back. He has co-authored 38 cookbooks. Most recent one is all about cold canning. Today, Bruce is here to dispel food myths. We've all heard the so-called folk wisdom. Certain foods, eggs, beans, oysters, there are a million of them. And don't get me started on the five-second rule, all right? It's a food myth show today. Do you have one you believe to be true? Call us. Run it by Bruce Weinstein. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein, food myths and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and we welcome back Bruce Weinstein today. Bruce and Mark Scarborough produce a popular podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. They write a lot of cookbooks. Latest one is Cold Canning, the easiest way to preserve the seasons without hot water processing. Today, Bruce is here, and we'll talk about food myths. If you have a question or whatever as we roll along, you can do that too. But we want to discuss those things your grandmother told you that turned out not to be true. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein, if I give the wrong number several times, I've been giving a different number for our lockbox today and all week, and it's on my mind.
We're doing pretty
well, though.
That's excellent news.
I didn't actually look where we are at the moment, which probably I should have, but it's been a big day, and so everybody's stepped up. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. When does the movie come out for Cold Canning?
Oh, from your mouth to the goddess's ears.
Can you imagine doing that, making a movie?
Of a cookbook.
Yeah.
That would be great. That would be fabulous.
I thought of a great idea for a motion picture. I think I told you this.
A motion picture. Was it a talkie?
Yeah. Cold Cuts, the motion picture. Okay. What do you think?
Sure.
Yeah.
Love it.
You want to direct?
Yeah, sure.
So today you've written great things. You wrote the Cold Canning book, mm-hmm. the Essential Air Fryer Cookbook, mm-hmm. which is an amazing resource.
Thank you. Well, it's an amazing appliance. I love air fryers. God, that's my favorite way to cook in the winter. In the summer, of course, it's outside on the grill. It's my favorite way.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my many daughters is a real air fryer aficionado, and she's always got the thing out working on it every mm-hmm. Never once has she given me anything to try, but I'm sure it's delicious.
She doesn't cook for her dad.
She cooks in the day or the night when I'm not around, and all the more for her. Well, some years ago, you wrote a book about food myths, and it's called Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them.
Mm-hmm.
So fresh on the heels of a program we did a few weeks ago about foods we hate, mm-hmm. we thought we would do a food myths program today, and, here's one. It's not in your book, I'm sure. It's not necessarily a food myth because mm-hmm. you're not going to eat it straight up. But my grandmother always, anytime I had a bee sting,
mm-hmm.
she would put Adolph's meat tenderizer on it.
I've heard of that, and I don't know what it does except breaks down proteins. So perhaps it'll help get rid of some of those irritating compounds that the bee put into you. It's also going to sort of start digesting your skin, so there you go.
Digesting my skin. All I know is the bee sting still hurt, but now I guess it was just the skin dissolving.
And think how tender it was.
My skin.
Your arm. Yeah, wherever it bit you.
I got to be honest, we've never done a cannibalism food Friday, but we'll write it down.
Well, it cracks me up that you said that we're going to talk about things that our grandmothers told us, because the first one on the list, which is the title of that book you mentioned, Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them, would not have been something either of my Jewish grandmothers probably would have talked about, since they both kept a kosher house, and lobsters aren't kosher, but my parents ate lobster.
Okay.
I love lobster. So let me ask you, Ray, do lobsters scream when you boil them?
Ah, boy, I've never... Okay.
Have you ever boiled a lobster?
I have boiled lobster. I've been around when lobsters are boiled.
Okay.
We like to go to Maine in the summertime. I have never heard a lobster scream, but I'm going to say, if it's even a question, if this even came up, it must be a thing. And yeah, I'd say yes.
Lobsters don't have vocal cords, so therefore they cannot scream.
All right, that's one wrong for me.
Now, the air does rush out of their shell, and they can make a whistling, or they can make sounds, and they're going to move around in the pot, so some people just don't like the sounds they make. But, you know, when you throw a lobster in a pot, it's not going to be happy.
Okay.
But you're going to be happy at dinner.
And they're green, right?
Green.
They turn red when you put them in?
They turn red. They're sort of a dark, I guess you would say that they're a dark greenish brown, yeah? You know there are blue lobsters?
I have heard that
they're very rare.
And so are they tasty?
I've never had a blue lobster.
No.
I've even seen lobsters that are half blue, like right down the middle. One side is blue and one side's not blue.
So an orange and blue, like a Mets logo lobster.
There you
lobster.
Go. Except when you cook it, it's all orange.
Yeah, and the lobster probably has a better one-loss record than the Mets, so it's fine.
Well, especially this year, from what I hear.
Yeah, let's not go into that. All right, try me again, Bruce Weinstein.
Okay, Ray, here's the deal. You take something out of the freezer to make dinner, or you take it out so your wife can make dinner for you.
Right.
Let's say it's, a turkey breast.
Okay, turkey breast that was frozen is in the freezer.
It's in, now it's, you've thawed it.
Okay.
Can you refreeze it?
I would imagine it depends on what it is.
It's a turkey breast.
I'm going to get it wrong, but I'm going to say, no, you cannot.
I grew up hearing that. I grew up being told by my mom, my grandmother, you cannot refreeze it. The truth is, you can't refreeze ground meat. Okay, so that's done. Once it's
thawed. Okay, why?
Because ground meat has too much potential of contamination in it, just in the grinding process. And then when you thaw it, even if it's thawed in the fridge, and then you refreeze it, there's too much time for bacteria to potentially grow. However, if you're talking whole muscle meat, a steak, a turkey, you know, where it's not ground up.
Yeah.
And if it's thawed in the refrigerator, not on the counter, if it's thawed in the refrigerator and never goes above 40 degrees, you can refreeze it.
So I guess that's another wrong answer. I'm not sure, but
now it may the texture may get affected a bit because it's going to lose some moisture in the thawing and the freezing process.
Right.
But it is perfectly safe to refreeze whole muscle meat. That's a steak, a roast, you know, a turkey breast, a whole chicken, as long as it was thawed in the refrigerator.
Huh.
That's the key.
Okay, that's a good one to know. Our guest today is Bruce Weinstein, and we're talking about food myths today. And the number is 800-348-2551 if you want to ask Bruce a question. The book is actually, what, several years old?
Oh, yeah, the book came out a while ago, but it's an oldie but a goodie. I love this book.
It's a classic.
So, Ray, I'm going to pull something out of here
for you. All right, here we go.
So you see a sign on a chicken, or on the label of a chicken in a store that says free-range chicken.
Right.
Would you think that chicken's been running around outside in the free range?
Well, that's what it says.
Mm.
Are there no rules?
The rules say that if it's labeled free range, it just means that a door has to be opened within that chicken facility so the chicken could go outside if it wanted to. But in all likelihood, they don't.
So it's free will chicken is what it is.
Free range chicken. Probably the first time that chicken's going to see the great outdoors is when it hits your grill on your deck.
You're kidding me. And so do they all do this?
Every one of those words, all that window dressing has meanings. And you have to look them up and see what they actually mean.
My neighbors had free range chickens
for a while. They were out running around.
Yes,
those were backyard chickens.
Boy, in the summertime, they stink. I'll tell you that.
What do chickens do besides eat, Ray? That's stinky.
Let's move on. 800-348-2551. Food myths today with Bruce Weinstein. And all right, so we have time for one more.
Okay.
So far, it's not going that well. We'll take a break and then we'll see what happens.
Hey, how big do you think jumbo shrimp are?
Jumbo shrimp. So before I answer, does the FDA or some responsible organization have categories and say it has to be this before it's a jumbo?
Here's the thing about shrimp and words. Small, medium, large, extra large, colossal, jumbo.
Yeah.
They're really meaningless when it comes to shrimp and scallops and that stuff. In the industry, shrimp is measured by how many there are per pound. So you might see a one package that says jumbo shrimp and they're 10 to 16 a pound. You might see another package that says jumbo shrimp and they're 18 to 20 a pound.
Okay.
So the fewer per pound, the bigger they're going to be. So it's always best when you go to buy shrimp to look at how many there are per pound. If you want a real treat and you want shrimp that are like lobster tails, go for like the U8s, under 8 per pound. Those are going to be giant, giant shrimp.
So if you want a shrimp that is the size of a Virginia ham, what would that be, a U1?
I don't even think they sell those, but sure, you could look for those. Definitely go for the U8s.
Bruce Weinstein is our guest today. It's Food Myths. We look forward to your calls at 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. So far, I'm 0 for 3, and we'll see what happens as the show rolls along. We'll be back. Hey, everybody. Thanks who kicked in this morning for the lockbox section of our Fun Drive. Fun Drive begins on Monday morning at 6 a.m., and we are cranking. I think we're over 460,000 as we speak. So that's pretty good. You have done, of course, I could be wrong by 100,000. The way things are going on this show, I could be way off. But if you look on the website, you'll see it. WAMC.org is the place to make your pledge. Anything counts between now and then. We'll see you Monday at 6. It's Food Friday today, and Bruce Weinstein's our guest. We're talking about food myths. The number is 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Nikki writes in, my friend Jim showed me that if you flip the lobster on his back and massage between the legs and his torso, he'll go into a trance before you drop him into the pot. Hmm. It seemed to work multiple times. Is the lobster trance a myth? Sounds vaguely scatological.
That is a new one on me. I have never heard of that. I've heard people that like to put the lobsters in the freezer to sort of the ultra cold, sort of before they freeze to death, they get kind of logy so that people feel a little bit better about boiling them then. But, I mean, the most humane way, if you're going to eat a lobster,
right,
the most humane way is the way chefs do it, which is you take a knife and you kill it with a knife before you, because that's instant, right? That's really instant, so it is the most humane way if you're going to do that. But let's face it, if you're going to eat anything that has meat, something has to die. Right?
Most of the time. Mm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest today is Bruce Weinstein, 800-348-2551. It's myths on the program, food myths. All right, hit me with your best shot.
Okay, well, speak of something else that has to die for you to eat.
Fine.
Ray, what's gelatin made out of?
Gelatin is, well, it's much like Soylent Green. It's made of people.
Well, you probably could make it out of people, but I hope not.
No, it's bones, right? It's chopped up bones, and you grind it up, and then...
I'm going to give you half a point for that.
Ooh.
Because when you make soup at home out of bones,
right,
it turns into jelly, right? It gets jellified. But what's turning into jelly there is all the cartilage that's on the end of the bones. The cartilage melts and becomes gelatin. Commercial gelatin, everyone used to think it was made from hooves, from horse hooves.
Yeah.
Hooves are made of the same thing that your hair is made of, keratin. So can't make jello out of that.
You can't have hair gelatin.
Skin.
Skin.
Skin is what it's made out of, hide. It's made out of hide because that's all collagen. So maybe let's go back to your grandmother's thing with the tenderizer on your arm with the bee sting. Maybe it's connected.
I'm a little disturbed by this show. I don't know, man. All right, so I get a half a point for that.
I'll give you half a point.
Bruce Weinstein is our guest. If you have a food myth you want to run by the master, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. What's next?
Hey, Ray, have you heard that red wine lowers your cholesterol?
I have. I've heard people say that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a wine drinker, so I've never tested it out. No, I'll say it does not.
Yeah, I think you're right. It doesn't. I mean, there may be chemicals in there that can help towards giving you better blood chemistry, but you would need such quantities of that you couldn't drink enough red wine.
Well, isn't that the end game? Isn't that the excuse? I mean, people, oh, yeah, it's good for me. Glug, 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 glug.
Well, okay, but you do like to drink. You like to have a cocktail every now and then.
Yeah.
So... have you heard the one where alcohol cooks out of a dish if you cook with
100%, it? 100%. And we know it does. We know it does.
It does not cook out 100%. Some of it does, but not all of it. There's always going to be a little bit of it left.
That's wrong. Okay. What do you mean? If you boil it, it's going to boil off, right?
But not. There's going to be a tiny little bit left. So you have to be careful if you're cooking for people that can't drink for whatever, whether it's for a religious reason or if they have a problem with alcohol. And especially if someone has allergies or religious issues with alcohol, you have to be careful because you flame a steak in brandy. There's going to be a little bit of alcohol left after the flame dies out.
Well, that's interesting. I've never heard of this. And I like steaks, but I usually grill them.
Mm-hmm.
You can flame them in brandy?
Yeah, why not?
You have to cook it first, though, right?
Well, sure.
That's...
Sure.
No?
Well, I like steak tartare.
Really, you do?
I do. I love steak tartare.
You don't see that much anymore.
I don't eat it out because I don't know where that steak came from, but... At home, if I get a tenderloin from a local farm that I know, and I like, not only know the farmer, I know the animals that it came from, I feel comfortable eating it that way. So I make great steak tartare.
You know, you bring up a great point. And maybe a month ago, I had a great chef on, and we were talking about just this. And he was complaining. He said, you don't know where, even if you get the meat from somebody reputable,
mm-hmm.
not casting aspersions upon every purveyor and vendor.
Not. Of course not.
But he said the real problem is knowing where the meat comes from.
That's right. And I do trust higher end restaurants, and maybe that's, you know, maybe I shouldn't, but I tend to. But even still, I won't go as far as to eat steak tartare in most restaurants, which is strange because I will eat oysters. I mean, I love oysters. And, you know, you get one bad oyster, then you'll probably never eat another one. Luckily, I haven't gotten one.
I don't think I've ever had an oyster in my life.
Oh, you don't? Oh, they're so great. It's not just the flavor in oysters that's so good. It's the whole ceremony behind oysters. It's the shucking them. It's the being presented with a platter of oysters on ice. It's the squeeze of lemon juice.
You eat them raw, right?
Uh-huh. Yes. I don't like cooked oysters. I only like them raw.
Okay, this email came in from Kip in Alford, Massachusetts. Oh, boy. These are words I can't pronounce, so enjoy. Pretend we're on Medical Monday, and I'm trying to... Kip writes, I'm bothered by two biochemical food myths.
Hmm.
Phytoestrogens in tofu causing increase in estrogen in males. It doesn't.
Okay.
Do you believe that?
I believe it doesn't.
All right, here's another one from Kip. Chocolate makes you happy due to phenylethylamine, PEA, which is not true. You need to eat more than 2.2 pounds of PEA to be enough, and then it wouldn't cross the brain-blood barrier.
Mm. Well,
was that in your book, Mr. Smarty Pants?
That was not in my book, but I mean, a chocolate makes me happy for other reasons, just because it's so friggin' delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, God, there's nothing better than good chocolate. But unfortunately, good chocolate can run you 50, 60, 70 bucks a pound.
It's getting more expensive.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever have those, Clark bars? They're really good.
Oh, yeah. I like Clark bars. I do love a good candy bar. Hey, Ray.
What?
I know you don't cook. Not very much.
Absolutely correct.
But if you were going to cook and you were going to cook something with mushrooms, would you wash them?
Well, of course. You have to wash all your produce,
good
right?
Good for you.
Really?
I'm glad to hear that. Because there's a myth that you shouldn't wash your mushrooms. Just wipe them off. I agree with you, Ray. Wash your mushrooms. You know what mushrooms grow in, right?
No, not exactly.
Well, yeah.
Well, not all of them.
Not all of them, but you want to wash them.
All right, fair enough. I don't eat that many mushrooms, only on a pizza pie once in a while.
Mushroom pizza, yum.
Big time. The number is 800-348-2551. All right, let's try one more, and then we'll go to the phones here with Bruce Weinstein.
Okay, Ray, how do you keep from crying when you cut an onion?
I got this one, and I got this one from my wife, and she does a lot of onions.
Okay.
Yeah, you get them very cold. You refrigerate them, and you get them very cold.
Doesn't really work.
Ouch.
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay, I'll tell my wife.
The number one way you can not cry from onions is get someone else to cut them for you. But if you really want to avoid it, set up a fan on your counter, blowing it all away. Because when you cut an onion, it creates fumes. Those fumes get into your eyes. When it mixes with your eye, that's when the chemistry happens, and it causes, you know, an acid burning thing in your eye.
So if you
blow it away, you have a fan blowing those fumes away as you cut it, then you won't cry.
So if you wore welder's goggles when you did it, you'd be fine.
Or swimming goggles, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that?
I don't.
All right. The number is 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein is our guest. Ron is in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Ron, go ahead.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Howdy.
I have a question about escargot.
Mm. Okay.
I was under the impression that they are garden snails and not actually from the ocean.
Okay. Well, I'm curious where you heard that escargot were from the ocean. They're land snails. I do not believe that they're ocean snails. Ocean snail version of that could be whelks, which kind of look like snails, and they're from the ocean, and they're quite delicious. I had a bunch of whelks when I was in Canada last year. But escargot are fantastic. I quite honestly don't care whether my snails come from the ocean or from land. They're really something delicious, and you should not be afraid to eat them.
Ron.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Ron. I appreciate the call very much. Let's go to Wendy in Woodstock. Hello, Wendy.
Hi. I just want to make a comment about lobsters. There's scientific evidence, lots of studies, that lobsters, you throw them in boiling water and they feel pain. And in the UK and New Zealand and Switzerland, they have legally recognized lobsters and other crustaceans as sentient animals capable of feeling pain. And those regions require animals to be humanely electrocuted, if you want to do that, prior to commercial cooking.
Interesting.
So that is it's not a myth. They feel pain. So enjoy cooking live musk.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Wendy. That was a great one. 800-348-2551. You electrocute your lobsters. Let's see. Do you have another one for me?
Oh, of course. Ray, if you cooked chicken or someone gave you chicken and it was pink when you cut it open, would you think it's safe to eat?
Absolutely not. And it's ruined many a barbecue at my house because I'm so paranoid about just that. And I won't have it.
What about pork? Would you eat pork if it was pink?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's why I make the worst chicken and pork of all.
Okay, both of those meats can be a little pink at the bone and still be safe to eat. There is the only way to really know your meat is cooked properly is with a meat thermometer. And you got to use a thermometer.
Actually,
and perfectly cooked pork is going to be pink in the middle, and perfectly cooked chicken may still be a little pink at the bone.
You know, we did up our game a couple few years ago, and we got a meat thermometer.
Excellent.
And it has eased our mind about doing chicken and pork chops and stuff like that.
I think everyone should have a meat thermometer. It's a fabulous tool. It's one of the most important tools you can have in a kitchen.
Here's another thing. I don't know if you do any gardening. Do you do any gardening?
Mark does all the gardening.
All right, so here's the thing. If you, in fact, you can use your meat thermometer to check the temperature of the soil. Did you know that?
It doesn't surprise me. Of course you could check the temperature of anything. But why are you checking the temperature of your soil?
For when to plant. You need to have a certain temperature at some point.
I didn't know that. Did that come up on your gardening show?
It did come up on the gardening show, and I thought I would just lord over you on one topic just for a moment.
Hey, when you get a package of steak in the supermarket, there's red stuff that's liquid in there.
Yeah.
What is that? What do you think that is?
Say it again.
When you get a steak package, a package of steak or a roast in the supermarket, the bottom of the package is going to be some red liquid.
Yeah, it's blood.
No, it isn't.
What is it?
It's myoglobin.
Well, that's okay. Globin is part of blood, right? Hemoglobin.
But it is not blood. It is the chemical part of it that makes blood red and all that, but it is not blood.
All right, so...
Animals are bled before they are butchered and cut up.
So what is myoglobin exactly again?
Oh, it's a component of meat, and but it's not blood.
You can't eat it though, right? You shouldn't.
It can't hurt you.
Really? Have you done it?
Well, I don't eat it raw.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't drink the stuff.
Well, steak tartare for God's sake. I mean, come on.
Okay, here's one for you.
All right.
Every Thanksgiving, people say this: eating turkey makes you sleepy.
Absolutely.
Does it?
Yeah, tryptophan, right?
There's so little tryptophan in the turkey that you would eat. What makes you sleepy are the stuffing, the bread, the biscuits, the corn, the sweet potato pie.
Are you
sure?
The
endless carbs, the eating till you want to bust. That's what makes you sleepy. You would have to eat that whole turkey begin to get the amount of tryptophan that would make you sleepy.
Not only did my grandmother say that, everybody I knew said that. So I'm going to have to say I need to see the science on this.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Well.
I'm going to be a conscientious objector to that one. Bruce Weinstein's our guest, and it's getting a little testy. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Food myths. And the book is Do Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them Until You Electrocute Them? By Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. Mark is not here today. 800-348-2551.
Hey, Ray, do you tap a watermelon to tell if it's ripe?
Now this, okay, so I'm not a huge fan of watermelon, but I understand that, yes, indeed, you do, because something or other inside the watermelon is, yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is no.
All right, there's another one.
There are ways to tell if a watermelon is ripe, and the easiest one for almost anyone going to a supermarket is to look at the whole watermelon. There's going to be a spot on the watermelon that is a different color than the rest. So if most of the watermelon is dark green, this is going to be what they call a belly spot, where the watermelon was resting on the ground.
Yeah.
And that belly spot gets lighter, it gets white, or it gets yellow. The bigger the contrast between the belly spot and the dark green or the light green of the watermelon, the riper it is. So if you see four watermelons and one of them has a belly spot that's beautifully yellow, or, you know, it's a big contrast, that's the one you get.
Will a watermelon ripen if you just leave it on the counter?
Mm-mm.
Really? No, so once you buy it, that's it?
A watermelon is done. Once it's picked, it's done.
No kidding.
Yeah, some fruits will continue to ripen. You know, avocados continue to ripen. Peaches will continue to ripen and get sweeter. Speaking of peaches, how do you know peaches ripe? Do you squeeze it like everyone in the supermarket does?
Peach is ripe. I'm trying to remember the last time I had a peach. I don't know. Throw it at the neighbor's house.
No? No. Smell it. Pick up the fruit and smell it. Peaches, nectarines, plums, cantaloupes. Pick them up. Pineapples. Put them next to your nose and smell them. If they don't smell like anything, chances are they're not going to taste like anything. So if it smells like a peach, it'll taste like a peach.
Let me ask you a question. You go into your Stop and Shop or whatever it is near your house, and there's Bruce Weinstein sniffing peaches.
This is why you have to wash fruit when you get home, because people have done all sorts of things to them.
800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein is here. We're talking food myths on this edition of Food Friday. What else you got?
So I'm going to go back to your L-tryptophan for you here.
Yeah.
Because This is the deal with it. You need to eat so much L-tryptophan, probably more than is in an entire turkey, and even purified L-tryptophan, the kind in pills and stuff, they're a very mild sedative. I mean, do you get sleepy, Ray, when you eat edamame in a Japanese restaurant? They supposedly have lots of L-tryptophan. In fact, they have as much as turkey. And how about eggs? Ounce per ounce, eggs have four times as much L-tryptophan than turkey does. Do you get tired after you have an omelet?
You know, I never checked. Got to be honest with you. Maybe.
Okay. Ray, where do you store your coffee beans?
We store our coffee beans now. I think I know the answer to this. Okay. I know where you're going. This is about freezing coffee beans, right?
Is that good or not good?
We don't do it, but because we don't do it, I'm going to say, yes, you should do that.
No, you shouldn't do that.
Why?
Because the freezer is a moist environment. There's a reason freezers fill up with frost, right?
Right.
When you open it, so you do not want moisture on your coffee beans. And you take them out of the freezer, you measure them out, you put them back in the freezer, all that in and out, moisture is going to build up on the coffee beans and ruin them.
But doesn't leaving them in a container that has air in it on the counter, doesn't that also ruin it? Oxidization?
So there's a couple of things you need to do with coffee beans. Don't buy more than you're going to really use in a short period of time, meaning a couple of weeks. Keep it in a dark place. Light is terrible for coffee beans. So keep it in a closet, a pantry closet. Keep them in something that is as airtight as possible. And it's okay to keep them at room temperature, just not any place that's hot.
Do you guys ever use those sealers, those vacuum sealers?
I love
you. Do
my
you
vacuum
have you written a book on that?
No, can't imagine a cookbook on that. I mean, you do sous vide by vacuum sealing. You know what sous vide is? Yes, I'm sure you've had.
Sure,
chefs
you leave it on the sidewalk and it cooks.
So that's when you seal food in the plastic and then you cook it at very low temperature hot water.
Right.
So like you can cook it at 120 or 130 degrees of hot water for hours and hours and hours, and you can end up with a chuck roast that's fork tender but looks absolutely rare.
And is also lukewarm and not delicious.
Well, but after it comes out of there, then you sear it. Then you put it on the hot grill or in the cast.
Why, dude? Why? That's extra work for no reason.
So it looks good. You don't want to eat a chuck roast that's not beautifully charred on the outside.
I close my eyes anyway. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Bruce Weinstein, Food Myths Today. We invite your calls, regardless of what they're about. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Say, have you heard about the lockbox? I've mentioned it a few times today. I'm not going to give you the phone number because there's no volunteers back there. But if you want to throw a dollar in that lockbox right now, it's open all weekend. WAMC.org. No kidding around. Every dollar you put in helps this station grow and thrive, and you've been there for so many years. Go to WAMC.org and do your thing. We'll see you Monday morning at 6 for the fun drive. It's Food Friday today. Bruce Weinstein is back with us today. 800-348-2551. We're talking about food myths, and we've already had a rollicking discussion. And if you count up all, let's see, I've been asked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 questions. I have half a question right. So that's pretty right. Much how I did in school and ended up in radio, frankly. 800-348-2551. You ready to hit the phones here for a couple?
Oh, sure.
Right, Sven in Clifton Park. Hello, Sven.
Hello, Ray.
Welcome. You're on.
Thank you.
Yep.
See, I've got another way to prepare lobster that I happened to partially witness 50 years ago when I was about 18 years old working at a summer camp. And two of the guys who worked at this camp were preparing a lobster one evening, and one of them was a chemistry major, and he used ether somehow on the lobster before boiling it.
Wow.
Now, it apparently went well in terms of the cooking,
mm-hmm.
But after they had eaten the meal,
oh boy.
The comment was that after they burped, they smelled or tasted ether.
Wow.
Okay.
So maybe we don't recommend that.
I also don't know where I'd get my hands on ether. And where am I going to get a mask?
He was a chemistry major, and I guess he somehow had access to it.
And
I thought it was a little bit different.
Yeah. That,
did he fashion a mask to fit over the lobster's mouth?
I don't know.
They don't have lungs.
Oh, could you put it in the water?
Oh, is ether soluble?
By the way, I don't even know if this is legal, Sven. So, I mean, you know, maybe we shouldn't be discussing the ways to do it, but certainly an interesting one, man. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Wow. Let's go to Elizabeth in New Paltz. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I wanted to address the issue about coffee and the issue about onions.
Splendid.
First, the coffee. Every package of coffee in every box store and every supermarket comes in a packet that has a circular valve. And the purpose of that valve is that the coffee off-gases carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. But besides for that, every time you open the package, you can push out all the air, including the oxygen that would oxidize the beans and cause them to not be fresh.
Uh-huh.
Every bag, every brand has that circular valve on it.
I did not know that.
Yep. It's made so the
bags. Go look at every bag in every supermarket, every box store. I don't have to name.
That's going to take
all
a while.
All of them have it.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay. The other thing about onions, if you have a very sharp knife when you're preparing the onions and you're cutting it nice and cleanly, then it's the bruising of the onions that gives off the whatever it is, the gas or whatever, that irritates the eyes. But if you have a very sharp knife and you cut it very cleanly and quickly, according to how every chef is instructed to cut the onions, then you don't need anything. You just cut it and your eyes won't be irritated.
And
make sure that the knife is sharp.
Have you tried this, Elizabeth?
forever, yeah.
And it really works, huh?
It really works. I've never had a problem cutting onions. You cut it in half longitudinally, then you cut it you cut strips longitudinally, and then you cut across, and you do it with a sharp knife, and there's never a problem with it irritating your eyes. The trick is having a sharp knife for any food preparation, the sharpest knife you can have. And I found that the big chef knife is easier to use than the small one. And it's safer to have a sharp knife than it is to have a knife that's not sharp, because it's less likely to fall off and cut you.
This is true. You should have a sharp knife. You should always work with sharp knives in your kitchen. Dull knives are dangerous. And sharper knives will make your work go much faster in the kitchen and make it more fun, too.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a great call.
And if you use the sharp knife when you're preparing the onions, then you won't have your eyes get irritated.
Okay. Well, Elizabeth, that was a great one. Thank you and have a good weekend. Question for you.
Yeah.
Do onions scream when you cut them?
No, right. But your finger, you'll scream if you cut your finger with a dull knife.
You got that right. Mm. Arlene is in Chatham. Arlene, you're on with Bruce Weinstein.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. So I saw on the show called The Bear, the chef show, that you should not rinse your chicken because it'll make the bacteria go everywhere. So now I'm thoroughly confused.
Okay.
Do I rinse my raw chicken?
That's a really great one.
That is a good,
and I've heard this before.
That is a good question. Some people love to wash meat before they cook it, and I understand that desire, to do it and make it clean, but most people, when they turn the water on and put a chicken under the faucet, water is going to splatter. It's going to bounce off of that chicken, even if it's a fine mist that you can't really see. If there is contamination on that chicken, you are more likely to spread that contamination by washing it under a stream of water. So if you're insistent on doing it, I suggest maybe filling a big bowl with ice water
in
the sink. Well, I don't know if I use put food in my bathtub.
All right.
But you could put a big bowl in the sink, and then you could submerge the chicken, and that way it's not splashing everywhere. But unless the chicken shows signs that it needs to be washed, like it stinks when you take it out of the package, quite honestly, then I wouldn't eat it even if it was washed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think that whole point of washing it, you can actually spread contamination if there is contamination on it. Now, let's be real. Not every piece of chicken from the store is contaminated, right? Not every chicken that you open up has salmonella.
Should any be contaminated?
But sometimes there can be salmonella. There could be things that will be killed by cooking it long enough. I mean, there's a reason why food safety. Look, Jay, there's a reason why you cook your chicken till it's not pink, right? You want to be safe.
Right.
So what are you trying to get rid of there? Contamination.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you cook it, it's going to kill that, right?
It is, which is why if you cook it properly, you don't need to wash it.
Arlene, do you rinse the old chicken?
I've been rinsing chicken for all my life, so okay. I'm going to stop now.
All right, fair enough.
Here's one that it cracks me up when I see this on TikTok. People washing ground beef. Have you ever seen that, Ray?
Negative, Captain.
Yeah, me, it's like crazy. I'm like, who washes ground beef? But people do.
All right.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Arlene, thank you for the call. What social media are you on?
that's cool.
Very strange.
TikTok.
Oh, it's on TikTok?
Yeah.
You and the kids on the TikTok.
Yeah, me and the kids.
And WAMC, apparently. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Food Myths today with cookbook author Bruce Weinstein. You were getting, the last time you guys were on, you were getting certified for some professional thing. What was that?
Yeah, I am now a board-certified patient advocate.
And what do you do as a patient advocate?
Patient advocate helps people navigate their healthcare,
right,
and helps them navigate their illness. I help you prepare for your doctor's visits by helping you come up with questions to ask. I can accompany you to the doctor so that I could hear what the doctor's saying, and then we could debrief after to make sure that you understand what's going on. I can help you find second opinions. I can manage your appointments. I can make sure that all your specialists are speaking to each other. If you have insurance issues, I deal with that.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, do you have to sign a HIPAA agreement with the patient you're working with?
Absolutely. It is a very HIPAA-compliant field. No doctor is going to speak to me about a client until I give them a HIPAA form signed by that client. So, yes, that is That is one of the first things we do when we sign paperwork, is make sure that the HIPAA forms are there.
Given how busy you are, you've written 38 cookbooks with Mark.
Yeah.
How much time do you have to actually be a patient advocate?
I've got a number of clients who take up time. That's great. Yeah. I love working with them. And I also volunteer at two hospitals. I volunteer at Yale New Haven Hospital, and I volunteer at UConn in the emergency room.
Wow. Good
yeah.
for you, man.
Yeah, I love
That's
doing
great.
That.
The number here is 800-348-2551. I guess we'll have him back on Medical Monday one of these times.
Sure.
If all right, so Dennis writes in. All right, Bruce, how do you prevent your fingers from smelling of garlic or onion after cutting them? I have some weird mushroom-shaped stainless steel thing, but I have no idea how it works or how to use it. And that's from Dennis in the 518.
You know, that is, it is, I'm going to say it's a myth, but they do sell stainless steel, like, it looks like a bar of soap, and it's stainless steel.
Yeah.
And there's supposedly something about the metal and the ionization, and it takes the smell off your hands. I find that that doesn't really work so great. The way I keep it off my hands is when I'm working with a lot of garlic, I put surgical gloves on in the kitchen, and that keeps the same thing I do when I work with hot chilies. I think it's not only should you have a meat thermometer, you should have a box of surgical gloves, because if you're mixing meat for hamburgers or for meatloaf, put those gloves on. You don't want to get your hands in there. And if you're chopping a lot of garlic or chilies, put those gloves on. It'll keep your hands from burning or smelling.
But when you take them off, you got to touch them anyway.
Well,
What's
if you
the
take
point?
Them off carefully, then you mean touch what? You
touch the gloves.
Nah, you peel them off and then you don't touch them. You throw them, they peel off inside out and you throw them right away.
Oh, I had a hell of a time with that during the pandemic. Let me tell you something. I never figured it out. Saba writes in, my mother's tip on chopping onions. Put onion peels between your upper earlobe and your head on both sides before you start. Works every time. Ethiopians consume large quantities of onions. A medium pan chicken stew might require upwards of five large onions chopped. I have never heard this. That is so
okay.
cool.
I have a question for you. What's an ear? You're going to put an onion skin on your upper
between earlobe? Your upper earlobe and your head on both sides.
What's an upper earlobe?
You know, the top of your earlobe.
Oh, I never heard that called an earlobe.
This is genius. Okay, so this is one you haven't heard of either, right?
So you're putting an onion skin on the side of your head, and that's going to stop you from crying?
Listen, I got to be honest with you. There must be a kernel of something to this. Saba's not joking here.
Okay.
She says it works every time. 800-348-2551.
I'm sticking with the fan blowing it across the counter.
Don't be ethnocentric, Bruce.
I'm
Come
not.
On. You know, 800-348-2551. We go to Brattleboro. Joyce, you're on.
When I've been in the supermarket selecting fresh figs, and with a lot of fresh figs, you can actually choose the figs that you want because they'll be in open containers. And I've had people tell me that it looks like you know what you're doing when I'm selecting these. And because I lived in Oregon where I chose, I had fresh figs that were growing on the tree. And I had heard that fresh figs do not ripen off the tree. And so when I select fresh figs, I always want to get the ones that are squishy, not the tiny ones that are hard. Mm-hmm. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. Figs are one of the ones that you don't want to smell them because they don't really have a lot of fragrance. And it is about the texture of a fig. So you do want to gently squeeze a fig. You want to be the first one at the store when they take those figs out and put them on display. Otherwise, everyone's going to be feeling them and squeezing them. And you squeeze them enough, they're going to start feeling soft, even though they're not. So you're right. Figs should be a little tender, a little soft, and that will be a sweeter fig.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Joyce. So then you know when the figs are coming out at your store and you're there right at that time?
You want to be there. I always say it's like, you know, you grew up in a house with eight people in one bathroom. You want to be first.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And let's go to Lynn in Middletown. Lynn, you're on with Bruce Weinstein.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hello. Hi, so I had a question about the sous vide and all the question about microplastics because
sure.
I know at low temperatures, microplastics can go into your drinking water in the car.
Okay.
What is the thinking about that?
That's a good question.
It is a very good question. Microplastics are a huge concern. And that is one of those things where you have to make a personal decision. Some people make the decision not to drink plastic bottled water, that's
absolutely
perfectly great. And some people will make the decision that they are not going to cook with sous vide or eat food that has been prepared that way. Microplastics are a genuine concern. They are everywhere. And if you can avoid them, one probably should. But decisions like that are a personal decision that everyone has to make.
Thanks a lot for the call, Lynn. Appreciate it. Can you do sous vide in something other than plastic?
Yeah, it's not that I found.
Okay.
It's a plastic thing.
Like a wood box or something. You know?
Yeah.
Let's go to Teddy in Livingston. Teddy, you're on with Bruce Weinstein.
Hi, actually, it's Tony.
Oh, Tony, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, I have a statement about ether, although I wouldn't recommend using it inside. It can probably be found in any store that sells gasoline engines.
Ah.
It's a starter fluid, but I would not use it inside. It's explosive.
Oh, excellent.
And I have a question regarding gummies, cider vinegar gummies.
Ah.
Cider vinegar gummies and cider vinegar. Does it actually lower blood sugar?
Cider vinegar. You see a lot of these late night ads for a lot of these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I truly believe that if cider vinegar lowered blood sugar, there would be a whole lot of endocrinologists that would be out of work. This wouldn't be, I don't believe the medical industry is hiding things like that. I think that if you have type 2 diabetes and that really worked, your doctor would probably recommend you do it. So if you're talking now about supplements and those kind of things, you really have to talk to your doctors about supplements because they're unregulated. Nobody's researching them, and they're what's on
last
the
label.
Go ahead, Tony.
Last time I mentioned it to my doctor, he just said they're harmless.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, if your doctor says something is harmless, it certainly can't hurt you, and you can't hurt you to try it. But he also didn't say it works.
All right. Hey, Tony, thanks a lot. Let's go to Steve in Schenectady. Steve, you're on with Bruce Weinstein.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
My question is regarding oysters.
Okay.
The myth was eating oysters make you frisky. Is that true? If not an oyster, what food would make you feel frisky?
look at the time.
There's nothing that I've read that shows that oysters are an aphrodisiac. And especially if you get a bad one, I think it's the opposite of that.
Fair enough, yeah.
A couple glasses of champagne might help, you know, that loosens you up. But no, oysters are not going to make you frisky.
Okay, well, thanks for that one. Okay, we're about out of time here. Just quickly, Carla writes in, onions, what's worked for me after time after time, cutting onions is just look directly at a light and the eye burn will go away immediately.
Wow.
Do you ever try that one?
I have not tried that one. I'm going to have to try that one.
So get a very bright interrogation grade light.
Okay, and then burn my retina out, and then there you go.
Problem solved. Bruce Weinstein, how do people find your podcast?
Anywhere you get podcasts, Cooking with Bruce and Mark, go to our website, bruceandmark.com, and you can find out lots of stuff about us and what's going on in our lives. And our TikTok channel, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Also, everything's named that. Find us on Instagram, Facebook. It's all Cooking with Bruce and Mark.
TikTok. What else are you on, man?
Oh, our TikTok channel's fun, man.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, do the kids interact and stuff?
Yeah. We have all these videos of us just having dinner and talking.
Fascinating. And you can monetize that. Well, I'll be dipped. Hey, man, thanks for being here. Support comes from River Valley Co-op in Northampton and East Hampton. Supporting local farmers and featuring local produce, dairy, meat, and cheese, rivervalley.coop. Chef Rick Orlando now booking cultural food tours of Sicily, the Piemont, and Tuscany for October 2026. RICOrlando.com for more. And Real Pickles, a worker-owned cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts, producing organic fermented vegetables sourced from Northeast farms and found throughout the Northeast, realpickles.com. Thanks again to Bruce Weinstein for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Barb King screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. All right. No show on Monday. The WAMC Fun Drive begins Monday at 6 a.m. Remember, without you, we can't do any of this stuff, even as weird as this show was. Your help goes a long way. WAMC.org. We'll see you Monday at 6.